navigating the online world seems to require constant adapting, where many of us who aren't that techy but are quite busy would prefer to have machines we can switch on and be able to trust, like vacuum cleaners. But it's never quite that simple with technology that hoovers up all the information it can about us. Joining us is Sunday morning's tech correspondent, Helen Baxter from Mohawk Media. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning.
This past week, the lead consumer technology writer for the New York Times urged readers to switch their browser from Chrome, Safari or Microsoft Edge to a private browser. Long story short, the preferred choice was something called Brave, and you have talked about Brave before. The alarm bells seem to ring a bit louder on this topic of change, needing to change browsers every year, Helen.
That's right, and it's particularly interesting at the moment because of the news about the amount of data that's collected by Chrome and is connected to user and device ID. So it's not anonymized data, it's data that actually can track you. So a lot of people are advising, you know, think about your privacy, think about what browsers you're using. And yes, we talked about Brave last July, actually. I use it. I really like it. I use it across multiple devices. Reasons are that it has privacy built in. So it has like do not track functionality. So the ad tracking is switched off. You don't see adverts. It uses less energy, so it doesn't use up my battery on my mobile phone. It uses less bandwidth. It's three times faster than Chrome, they claim.
Gee.
And it also has this really interesting Brave reward scheme built in where you can earn what they call BATS tokens, basic attention tokens, for your attention. So you earn them for looking at sites. And then it's a cryptocurrency where you can pay micropayments to content creators.
Okay. Is the Brave experience seamless, or DuckDuckGo, seamless enough if people want to switch?
I find it absolutely brilliant. I mean, you think about it, most PCs come installed with Edge and most Macs come installed with Safari, so you actually have to install Chrome on quite a few devices. So the process is exactly the same. And I also believe that you can port over your history and any information from Chrome or other browsers you're using, so that if you do have, you know, history stored that makes it useful for you to remember sites you visited, it can just be brought over. And remember, you can have multiple browsers on a machine. Mm-hmm. I do run multiple browsers because, you know, sometimes I find Safari doesn't work very well. Sometimes I find Chrome doesn't work very well. Poor old Firefox. I haven't used Firefox for quite a while, but apparently, quite a lot of people are moving across to that. And then with DuckDuckGo, DuckDuckGo is actually a search engine that doesn't save your search history. And apparently DuckDuckGo has recently rolled out a mobile browser. So but the cool thing about it is that it's an alternative search engine to Google that doesn't track you, doesn't save your history, and is anonymized.
There's possibly a subconscious feeling that a browser called DuckDuckGo can't be taken seriously.
Well, if you think about it, Google's a pretty weird word, yeah, and we're quite familiar with saying Google now as a verb.
Enough people, Helen, obviously don't care too much if their personal data is harvested in order to tailor personalised advertising to them. Mm-hmm. So why should they care?
Well, I think what's happening is we're choosing convenience over security. Services that we use, like mail and docs and search, holds a lot of private information, but they're also an advertising company. And I love this quote from Jeffrey A. Fowler at the Washington Post. He said, "Having the world's biggest advertising company making the most popular web browser is like letting kids run a sweet shop. And these trackers are following you around the web constantly." So I think it's a bit of a slippery slope. You know, you might not think it affects us, but long term, you know, the cost is really to individuals and society.
But, you know, at this point in time, we're not worried about being ruled by an authoritarian government which is going to comb all our pasts to find out what our political leanings are. That phrase you used, can track you. Mm. Let's say I'm a big online gambler. Mm. And I'd prefer that to be kept quiet, and I probably think only Google and I know, and Google won't tell anyone. So presumably we do think a bit like that. At some point, might someone tell someone else about what we have been doing, in your case, researching? Is this the danger? Is it a clear and likely danger?
Well, that's the thing. I suppose it depends on what your behaviour is. But the fact that just trusting that they're not going to tell anyone, they will be telling people. They work, you know, their advertisers know what you are doing. And it's important to remember that if you're searching, even if you switch on those, you know, privacy settings or incognito modes, your internet service provider or your company sysadmins, they can see what you're looking at. And sometimes you might think about it, switching that on as a trigger of, this person might be looking at something on the work system that we don't particularly want them to be doing. So, you know, it's not a real danger in that as soon as you type in something weird, you know, it's going to trip some switch that's going to affect you in real life. But I just think it is really important to be aware and just the steps that you can take to protect yourself and the fact that we just have to keep an eye on this space. It's really, really important because, like with the recent story with Facebook and Google rattling their sabres at Australia and saying, we will take our services away from you if you don't comply and stop trying to charge us for access to news. You know, they're as powerful as governments now.
If Google really is this amoral concerning our privacy, which I suppose itself seems a bit shocking and would have certainly seemed so 10 years ago, do we get advantages in return for using Chrome, for example?
Personally, I don't think so. People seem to think it's just too much hassle, it's too difficult, they'll just go with what they're already using.
Yes.
But once you've switched, it's easy. Your day-to-day experience is no different, apart from the fact you're not seeing lots of adverts. And even more interesting is what happens when you chat to someone about a brand and then it starts popping up all over your ad feed.
Yeah, that is a worry. A man named Philippe wanted to check his Bitcoin balance, so he searched the App Store on his phone for Trezor, the maker of a small hardware device he uses to store his cryptocurrency. So up pops the company's Padlock logo set against a bright green background. The app was rated close to 5 stars. He downloads it. He types in his credentials. What happened then, please, and what do you think about what happened?
So he typed in his credentials and poof, his $600,000 worth of bitcoins, which at the time was 17.1, disappeared into the scammers, into the ether and into the scammers' account. The money in effect vanished, or the bitcoin. And apparently 5 other people reported the same issue, so it wasn't just this one individual. There have been also scam apps in the Google Play Store, so it's not just the Apple Marketplace. But I think the issue here and the point that he has been making is that the Apple Store markets itself as a safe and trusted place. They call themselves the world's most trusted marketplace for apps. And each app is reviewed before going live into the store. And you can imagine the sheer volume they have to deal with is quite extraordinary. But it's actually quite easy for these scammers to get around the rules. What they do is they'll upload a legitimate app, get it into the system, and then what they do is they transform it into a phishing app. And phishing is a way of tricking you into giving up financial information. So it's kind of like a bait and switch.
Yes.
So they will, you know, they'll have put up a basic app, they'll have then changed it to a cryptocurrency wallet. It was reported. But it's too late. Once your money's gone, it's too late. And Trezor said that they had actually been notifying Apple for years about fake apps posting as Trezor. Because Trezor doesn't have an app. It's a hardware wallet. You physically buy a thing to hold your cryptocurrency. It's very much buyer beware. I mean, I do really feel for this person. But one of the points I think is interesting is he did this transaction on his phone. For something this important, when you have that much money at stake, I think you need to add some extra layers of checks and balances, like you would do if you were going to a bank. So step one, I would go to the source. So if you actually go to the Trezor website, they don't have a mobile app link on there. It's much, much better if you do it on a larger screen because you're more likely to spot something. It's much harder to spot a scam or make a misclick on a smaller screen. You know, I've accidentally clicked links on a mobile just because my thumb's a bit too big.
But
firstly, if it's financial, the first thing I would do is instead of going directly to the App Store, I would go to the website of the company first and then click through to where you can source their apps.
Right.
Always read the one-star reviews as well, because you can very, very easily fake five-star reviews with bots. And this happens a lot. So, you know, all those people, this is brilliant, I absolutely love it. They're not real people. Because in this Trezor case, that lots of people were saying in the one-star reviews, watch out, this is a scam, be right. careful. Seeing how many downloads, because the super popular ones have got millions of downloads. Whereas if there's one that looks similar, but there's only 1,000 downloads, you might think, okay, is it really the one I want? And then what permissions does it ask for when you install it? And if it's asking for access to stuff you don't feel like it would need, like accessing your photos or accessing, delete it. Just delete it.
The thing is, though, that you're techie and the app was on the App Store. This is the point, isn't it? How many of us would check its credentials? And we'd probably even be chary about where we clicked to check credentials. We're not conversant with, you know, fossicking and ferreting.
No, absolutely. These scams happen in lots of other spaces and places, like emails, for example. Constant phishing emails coming in where you think, oh, it looks like it's from a bank, or it looks like it's from an organisation you actually do work with. The flags are, make sure that you don't click on any attachments or links. If they're asking you for credit card information, do not
oh,
enter.
Oh, sure, yeah, here's what
you know, urgency, you know, limited offer only, that
right.
kind of stuff.
Yes, there's a lot of that.
And also with an email, you can actually look at what they call the email header. So when you get an email that comes in, you can click on the from drop down, and then usually there's a little bit of information under there that tells you who the sender is. And you can then spot very quickly whether or not the web address looks wrong. It's not legitimate. So that's a very quick and easy first check that you can do.
It's a good tip.
I've also noticed there's been some phishing links going out recently with live streaming. So obviously, for reasons, there's a lot more events that are happening now online. Or there's events which are happening which they're live streaming online. So, for example, a couple of weeks ago, Cuba Duper, which I'm very fortunate to live on Cuba Street, so it's all happening around me. And in the morning, I went online and I knew they were going to be streaming. I thought, great, I've got friends overseas or, you know, people who would really enjoy it. I think my mum watched it and she really enjoyed it. I noticed that in the comments, there were links to what looked like the Cuba Duper live stream. And I clicked on one of them and they were trying to get my credit card details. So the first thing I did is I went back to the Facebook page for the Cuba Duper Festival, found all the comments, put my comment on going, do not click this link. There's also scams that happen in real life, like a couple to watch out for, like people who have domain names. So they'll have a domain name company they register their web address with, and you have to pay for them annually or you know, sometimes you pay 3 years in advance. But there's been a spate of letters that go out just before your domain name is ready to renew, asking for payment, but it's not actually from the company you registered the domain name with.
Wow.
And the same thing has actually happened with trademarks as well. Renewal letters that look like they're coming from IPONS, the government website, saying your trademark is due to update, to renew, please pay. But it's not actually IPONS. So, you know, these things happen in real life as well. I think it's just the fact that if it's anything to do with money or giving away information that has value or your credit card details, stop and think before you click.
The bigger the screen, the better. You wouldn't do your online banking on your phone, for example.
No, I wouldn't. And even I have one device in the studio that I do my online banking, and it's the device that has the biggest screen, because it's just so easy just to misclick or accidentally do something on those tiny screens.
The biggest screen. Always a pleasure, Helen Baxter. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.